evening, and welcome to Donnell Edwards Viewpoints on the CWR Network. I am your host, Donnell Edwards. Welcome all of our listeners here in the United States, as well as our international audience in Canada, the United Kingdom, the Netherlands, Australia, Argentina, and wherever else in the world you may happen to be listening. We thank you. Tonight's special guest is a very interesting person. She is only 18 years old and is already a successful author. Her book is entitled Finding Home, which was published only 2 weeks before she graduated from high school. She is a first-generation Pakistani-American immigrant, and her book is about the challenges of struggling to fit into two different worlds. Although she was brought to the United States when she was 3 years old, she was raised with South Asian cultural influences, which demanded that she adhere to strict customs and instill the need for females to remain silent. In sharp contrast, her American experience included public schooling and offered liberties and freedoms she secretly longed to be able to express. When a distant family member told her that her liberal mindset would bring dishonor to her family name, she began writing poetry and finding her own voice. During her teenage years, she made annual journeys to Pakistan with her family, only to find herself perceived to be a foreigner. Returning home to the United States, she found herself once again considered a foreigner. Still not really fitting in, but for appearing too conservative, she is currently attending college in Virginia. Please help me welcome to Donnell Edwards Viewpoints, rising star and amazing author, Miss Dua Hamad.
Thank you so much for the introduction.
You are very welcome. Thank you for joining us this evening. This is going to be exciting.
Thank you so much.
First, would like to discuss your book, and then we'll like to delve into some of your culture and your life with your family as first immigration immigrants living here in the United States. So please tell us what inspired you to write your book, Finding Home, and what you hope readers will gain from reading it.
So when I first turned 18, I was starting my senior year at high school, and I wanted to give back to the community. I wanted to write something for the children of immigrants, something that they could relate to, because I know what I went through is something that thousands of them go through every single day. So I thought, okay, I'm going to write something that hopefully when they're having a bad day or they feel like they don't belong, they can turn to. But as I got to the end of the book, I had a new message. I had a new goal for my book. What I hope that readers get from reading my book is that differences weren't made to separate us. There was a time when they were celebrated, and hopefully we can get back to that time and we can work toward giving our future children a better future.
That's a very great point, especially with all of the things that we see going on in our country right now. We actually have a feature on our network and on my program called Race in America, Where Do We Go mm-hmm. From Here? And the whole point is to get people talking, because just as you mentioned, one of the big problems is we don't talk enough about the things that we have in common and get to better understand the things that are different about us. So hopefully we'll make some headway in that direction this evening. Now, getting back to the book, how long did it take you to write the book, and how difficult was it to write while you were still in high school?
So I was writing, I started in January of my senior year, and I gave myself a deadline. I was like, before June, we're going to publish. So I started cramming, but then in the middle of May, I decided everything I had written like wasn't good enough. So I spent the next 2 weeks rewriting everything. And then while writing in high school, it was extremely difficult because my goal was to just finish the book. And while doing that, my friends were interested in prom. They were interested in going out. And so I had to miss out on a couple of things because my concentration was on writing the book.
In the senior year, I can understand there would be a lot of distractions. Now, your book has been described as a collection of poetry from a high school teen's perspective on what it means to have a home. Would you agree that is an accurate description?
Yeah, definitely. The first chapter of my book, it talks about my experience growing up in America. The second chapter is like when I go back to Pakistan. And the rest of the book, it talks about how I find the bridge in between of understanding that do I owe everything to my native country where I grew, where I was born, or do I give out, like, realize that my home is in the country that I've grown up in.
Okay. Now, your press release for the book, Finding Home, states that each poem paints a moving picture about immigrant life in the United States and your struggle to bridge two very different cultures. I think you alluded to that momentarily a few minutes ago. So how were you able to express this poetically?
It was a lot of reflecting on my part. I reflected on my own personal experiences, but then I started talking to a lot of people that were around me that I knew, like, if they hadn't been through what I went through, they had something similar that they could relate to. So I sat down and I was thinking, okay, how can I say this in a way that, you know, it gives justice to everything we've been through? So it's very raw, and I think because it's very raw, I was able to let it out. If I added a filter, I don't think I would have been able to do it as well.
Okay. Would you favor us with one of your poems at this time?
Yeah, of course. 1 second.
Okay.
Okay. 12 years go by before I return to the land my parents left behind. When I got off the plane, it was like I was in a trance. I stood there in the streets, eyes hungrily trying to drink everything in, terrified that if I look away, I'd miss even more than I already had. Time had never been on my side. And I couldn't help but wonder, what would it have been like if I spent my childhood worshiping a green and white flag and standing instead of changing myself for one with stars and stripes, the life that could have been.
Okay. So was that the first time you returned to Pakistan?
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's very interesting. And much of what is in the book is similar to that?
So the second chapter is mainly like on my experience going back and the customs and traditions. And the first chapter is based on the American. And the third and fourth chapter is what I hope people will gain, like, from reading it.
Okay. So in a way, it's kind of autobiographical.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Very good. Now, Finding Home also has been said to take readers through a fascinating journey of questioning liberty, lifestyles and customs, freedoms, and making peace with the human desire to fit in. It's very interesting. So aren't those some of the same struggles that anyone might have, and so everyone can learn and be inspired from reading your book?
Yeah, I've had a lot of different people from different races and ethnicities read my book. It's not just, you know, Pakistanis. And sometimes when they read it, like, they're really surprised and interested, and they think, wow, like, they'll find one poem that they can relate to. It's really funny. Like, there'll always be a different person, and they'll say, okay, like, I totally get where you're coming from. So I feel like this book, either way, if you're not Pakistani, if you are Pakistani, like, you will find a way to relate to it.
Okay. It's just like you said, we all want to fit in. That's human nature. Now, for readers interested in learning about Pakistani culture, which we're going to talk about later in the program, what are some of the things they will learn about Pakistani culture from reading the book?
I think they're going to learn the secret side of Pakistani culture that unless you're in the society, you don't know about. In the media, I think you see either the really beautiful like clothes or the food, or you see a lot of violence, but you don't see a lot of things about like traditions or like morals or the things that, you know, that we can't let go of. So I'm going to talk a lot about those.
Okay. Now, please tell our listeners where they may get your book.
Okay. So it's available on Amazon for everybody in the United States, in Canada, and in London.
Okay.
If you type in finding home and you put my, usually it'll come up like it's the fifth one, but if you type my name next to it, Dua Hamad, it'll come up right away.
Okay, very good. Right now, we're going to take a brief break, and we would love to hear your viewpoint on our conversation, get your input. Just give us a call at 563-999-3660, and you'll be entered into our CWR Listener of the Month Appreciation Program. That number, again, is 563-999-3660. When you call, please remain on the line, and we will get to your call as soon as possible. That number, again, is 563-999-3660. If you have a question for our guest, Ms. Dua Hamad, when we return, we will discuss more about just who Dua Hamad is, her family, and her culture. So please stay tuned.
This is the CWR Network, hashtag 1 million strong.
People been saying to your friend, get a different face, and posting on their feed, they're super ugly. The things they say to them online are cruel and they're not true. So tell your friend, I'll stand up for you. Don't worry, I know what to do.
Know someone being bullied online? You can be a witness and make a difference by letting the world know it isn't cool and by letting your friend know you care. Learn more at eyewitnessbullying.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
In 50 feet, turn left. Why are you driving so slowly?
After a few drinks, I'm taking it slow.
Well, you're not fooling the cop behind you.
What?
Get ready to pay in 0.1 miles.
Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Unexpected reactions to smart financial decisions brought to you by FeedThePig.org.
Well, I finally did it. I improved my credit score.
You're kidding, right?
No.
How are we supposed to be the bad boys of electrosynth pop if you're out there being responsible? The band is about to be discovered. This is our year.
Yeah, you've been saying that for a while now.
You think anyone in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was worried about their credit score?
I never really thought that.
Of course they weren't. Rock stars aren't supposed to think about that kind of stuff. We're supposed to think about how many guitars we've smashed, write aggressively sensitive power ballads, start questionable fashion trends, tragically break up and blame creative differences.
All right, just... I thought maybe it was time to take control of my finances, you know? Start using a budget. Get out of debt. Set some goals.
A budget? Debt? Set some goals? Listen, I knew that we'd have our creative differences, but I was hoping they'd involve a little more scandal.
When it comes to financial stability, don't get left behind. Get tools and tips for saving at feedthepig.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
This is the CWR Network, hashtag 1 million strong.
Welcome back. If you just joined us, this is Donnell Edwards Viewpoints, and our very special guest is Ms. Dua Hamad, author of the book Finding Home. Dua, let's shift to you and your family. Can you tell us how many are in your family?
Yeah, so I'm the oldest. I have two younger brothers, and then it's me and my mom and dad.
Okay. Now, in your culture, is it customary to have small families, large families, or is size of the number of children even a factor?
I think it really depends on the family, but more you do see larger families.
Okay, all right. Now, tell us about your parents. What are their occupations, your mother and your father, and how would you describe your relationship with them?
My mother is a housewife, and my father is an accountant, and I am extremely close to both of them. I'm a major daddy's girl, but also at the same time, mama's girl, and they support me a lot, so I'm very thankful for them.
Now, your siblings, are you the oldest, or where do you fit in?
I'm the oldest, and I'm the only girl.
Okay. All right. So you get along well with your siblings, too, I would imagine.
Yes, I do.
what do they think about your book?
Oh, they both like it. And it's coming from them, like the fact that they complimented us a lot.
Okay, very good. Now, tell us about your friends. What are your closest friends like, and what are their interests? And are they primarily from the same ethnic background as yours, or are they a racially and ethnically diverse group?
So I have a lot of best friends. Some are Afghan, some are white, but I do have one older sister that is Pakistani. Older sister, she's a very close friend. But they're all very supportive, and while we all are very different, we all have the same desires, you know, to help the community out. We all want to see, like, a better future. So I think that even though we all come from different backgrounds, that doesn't stand in the way of us being extremely close.
Great. My hope is in the generation coming up to help eliminate some of these problems, the racial division problems we have in the world now. You were young when you came to the United States, only 3 years of age. So what was it like going through the acculturation process of being taught by your parents to live as an American while still learning and respecting your own culture?
I think it was very hard when we first got here because, you know, well, we don't think about it, like how hard it must be for our parents. You know, they're leaving everything and they're coming to a new land just for their children. And my parents always told me, you know, like we did this for you and we want you to have the very best future. But at the same time, we want you to know where you're from. And at the time, I was young and I would get bullied a lot for things that made me different in school, whether that be I was wearing traditional clothes or I was bringing traditional food to school to eat at lunch. So I didn't know as much as I should to embrace the culture as my own because at the time I didn't want to.
Okay, now as things progressed and you advanced in school, at what point did the bullying stop or did it?
I think when I got to high school and I finally started, I think the first trip back to Pakistan really made me understand just how lucky I am to be part of such a beautiful culture. So when I got back from that trip and I came to school, I had gotten a lot of comments before I went. And when I came back, I was ready. I was showing them pictures. I was ready to defend everything. I was like, you know, you're wrong. Like everything that you've said, I want to tell you, like my side. And eventually the bullying did stop when I learned to defend myself.
Okay, very good. Now, Dua, since the South Asian cultural influence under which you were reared demanded you to adhere to strict customs and instill the need for females in particular to remain silent, as a result of that upbringing, can you share with us what some of your struggles were or maybe still are in trying to meet the expectations and demands of both American and Pakistani cultures and how you have overcome those challenges?
Yeah, so my biggest struggle was here I was considered very conservative because some of the morals and things my parents had taught me, they were very different. So when I was here, all my friends would be like, oh, your parents are so strict, this, that. And I'd be like, no, they're really not. Like, when we go back home, we're considered the most modern. But that's the thing. When we went back home, we were considered the most modern, even though, like, to me, that was so strange because one land's telling me I'm too conservative. The other land's telling me I'm too modern. So I think it just, like, writing gave me a lot of, like, let me get out my frustration. So that made me able to get through everything.
Was there ever any conflict where you didn't really know who you were and you had to resolve that by deciding who you were going to be?
Yes. From when I was 12 to 16, that was the biggest problem. I didn't know, like, if I was a Pakistani. I didn't know if I was an American. And it was just I was willing to do anything to fit in, whether that be in either society. And I think if I hadn't found reading, if I hadn't found poetry, it would have been really hard to get through it.
Okay. So what are some of the other things listeners should know about your culture in contrast to American culture?
There's this phrase in Urdu, it's log kya kahenge, and that translates to what will people say? And I think that's the biggest contrast to American society, because, like, as a girl, we're expected to live by that. Like, if you do anything, if you step out of line, that's the quickest thing people will say. You know, what will people say? They will point fingers at you. And here, that may be, okay, so what? What if people point fingers at you? But in Pakistani society, that's a lot. That goes back to, like, oh, your family honor, your parents honor. I think that's one of the biggest things.
Okay. Now, what do you see as the biggest challenges in being multicultural in modern-day America?
I think the fact that there is a lot of negative assumptions and a lot of racism. So it's definitely, there are days when it's very hard to find the balance. Some days you're like, okay, how am I going to get through this day if this happens? And other days you're like, okay, maybe it'll be easier. So I think just the negative assumptions make it very hard.
Okay. Now, since you've already experienced this yourself, what advice would you give young people growing up within a multicultural lifestyle that requires both shifting and integrating two different cultures simultaneously?
I want to tell them, give your parents a break, because I never did. Understand that they're new at this too. And eventually, you know, they will get better. I have one poem in my book, and it talks about, you know, my parents, they're not the same that they were as they stepped off the plane 17 years ago. Because eventually they learn to adjust, but it takes time. But as for the children, I feel that, you know, you guys will get through this because you guys are strong and you guys are going to make this country even better.
You know, that's very interesting, because most times we think about the adjustment that the children have to make. But really, a lot of times children find it easier to fit in than the parents do. So that's an interesting point that you brought up. Now, your poems refer to feeling like a ship at sea. Why did you use that metaphor?
Because I felt like I was floating in between two lands. I was going back and forth between America and Pakistan. While I lived in America, I was making annual trips to Pakistan. So it was like, you know, I would go to one country and it would be amazing. I'd come back and I'd be like, okay, some, like, one bad thing or two bad things happened. So always I felt like, you know, it was this continuous just like shift that I was stuck in between and I couldn't get off.
Okay. And we'd like to hear from you. And if you have a question for our guest, Ms. Dua Hamad, give us a call right now at 563-999-3660. And by calling, you will be entered into our CWR Listener of the Month Appreciation Program, which could earn you $50. That number again is 563-999-3660. When you call, please remain on the line, and we will get to your call as soon as possible. That number again, 563-999-3660. We'll be right back after this break, and when we return, we'll discuss religion, immigration, and what it means to find home. So stay tuned.
This is the CWR Network, hashtag 1 million strong.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Dave, what are you doing?
Just sending a gift to Dave 2037.
Who?
Me in the future. I save a little money from every paycheck as a gift to Dave 2037, so he can spend it on things like anti-gravity boots or a hologram Doberman, something cool like that. I think Dave 2037 deserves it. He worked hard. What are you getting Steve 2037?
I guess I was thinking Steve 2037 would just fend for himself.
Well, all right, but don't expect to be borrowing my anti-gravity boots.
You want to have money in your future? You got to start saving now. Putting some money from every paycheck into a savings account or contributing to your 401k can make a big difference later. Put away a few bucks, feel like a million bucks. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's feedthepig.org.
Hey, let's just hope Steve 2037 doesn't get his hands on a cold time machine, because he is going to come back here and knock some sense into you.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
1 in 3 adults in America have prediabetes, but most don't know it. To let people know it can be reversed before it becomes type 2 diabetes, professional basketball player Julius Randle is doing everything in reverse.
I'm only dunking with reverse windmills. I drove the whole way to practice in reverse. I don't recommend it. This move is called the reverse shuffle. I do recommend it. And it took me months to learn how to speak in reverse, like this. Here's 10 almost for diabetes type 2 with living Ben has mom my. In other words, my mom has been living with type 2 diabetes for almost 10 years. So together, we want to say to the 84 million Americans at risk, exercise and healthy eating can help reverse prediabetes. Start by taking a simple one-minute risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Bet he can't say that in reverse.
This is the CWR Network. Hashtag 1 million strong.
Welcome back. This is Donnell Edwards Viewpoints, and our very special guest is Miss Dua Hamad, author of the book Finding Home. Dua, according to my research, Islam is the state religion in Pakistan, and the majority of the people, approximately 95 to 98%, are Muslim, either Sunni or Shia. Is that correct?
Yes, you are correct.
Okay. Now, are you and your family Muslims? And if so, has your religion created any problems for you living in America? For example, have you personally experienced racial profiling because of your national origin or your religion? Or are you aware of the Pakistani Americans or Muslims who have?
Me and my family are Muslims, and there have been times that our religion has gotten us targeted. And I think I don't personally wear a headscarf, but my mom does. We live in a very diverse area, so we don't get much racism here. But when we travel, there have been times where we've run into situations where people are just so extremely disrespectful or rude just because she's wearing a headscarf.
I'm just curious, when you experience things like that, does that again cause problems or issues in your trying to determine your identity because someone is telling you you don't fit in?
No, not anymore, because I've realized that there's always going to be people like that. While you can try to please everyone, there's always going to be a few people that say, oh, like, that's not right. And that's okay. You have to come to terms with there are going to be a few people out there that just don't like you. But maybe you can try to educate them or give them a few things that possibly could change their mind.
Okay, very good. Now, there's an ongoing controversy in the United States about immigration and deportation of illegal immigrants. And we'll be discussing DACA in a few minutes. But do you consider yourself to be an immigrant, and why or why not? And I have a comment after you respond.
I think I will always be the daughter of an immigrant, and we are citizens now, so we do. Like, America is our home, but I think I'll never forget that we are immigrants, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it was one of the biggest honors and privileges of our life to be given the opportunity to come into this country as immigrants. So I don't think I'll ever stop considering myself as one.
Okay. Well, I kind of have my own personal message for those people who are opposed to immigrants. Because according to Webster's Dictionary, an immigrant is a person who comes to a country to take up permanent residence. Now, by that definition, everyone now living in America is an immigrant. The only exception are those native or indigenous people to this land, once known as Indians and now known as Native Americans. And when one studies the true history of the country, he or she will find indisputable proof that this country was built by so-called immigrants. So unless we are of Native American descent in some way, all of us are immigrants. So are we going to deport everyone? So let's talk about DACA. For those who may not know, DACA is the acronym for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, a program created in 2012 by the Obama administration, allowing young people brought to this country illegally by their parents to get a temporary reprieve from deportation and to receive permission to work, study, and obtain driver's licenses. There are about 800,000 DACA recipients, also known as Dreamers, according to U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. President Trump wants to repeal DACA, which would mean that Dreamers are at risk of losing the only home many of them have ever known. How has that announcement impacted you?
It hasn't impacted me personally, but that doesn't mean it hasn't impacted me at all. I see what's on TV. I see what's on social media, and it's absolutely devastating. You see the videos of these people, and then you hear them talk, and they say, you know, this is the only home we've ever had, and, like, it's so devastating.
Okay. Now, let's revisit your journey as a first-generation immigrant living in the United States. During your teenage years, you made annual journeys to Pakistan, as you mentioned, with your parents. Approximately how many of these trips did you make? And tell us a little more. You've already told us some, but tell us a little more about what that was like for you.
I think I made 6 or 7 trips in my teenage years. And the first time I went back, I absolutely fell in love. If anyone ever asked me what was your first love, I'll say Pakistan, because when I went there, it was so beautiful. Everything that I thought I had heard about, it was completely either false. And what I was seeing was just a really beautiful country with so many traditions that I wish I had grown up seeing too, that were more available in America. But as I went back, my love for the country hasn't died. Like, every time I come home, I cry at the airport because it always gets to me. But there are things that I wish I can help change about the country to make it better.
Okay. Now, have you traveled very much in the United States?
Yes.
Okay. What area of the United States would you say may be most similar from a topography, a landscape standpoint, is Pakistan?
Did you say geographically?
The topography, the land and the mountains and rivers and trees and things of that nature.
I don't think anything can relate, honestly. Well, actually, no.
Yeah.
The trees, like Miami, can probably relate a lot because a lot of the trees and some of the sites there, they're a lot like alike, even though people find that so surprising.
Okay. All right. Very good. Now, what did you consider, what did you discover about the way your American acculturation was viewed by some in Pakistan?
When I started questioning a few things there, the basic liberties that I thought were normal in America, some people said there were that made me too modern. And for me, that was like a slap to the face because I was like, what do you mean too modern? These are basic liberties. But so I came to terms with that too over time.
Okay. Now, do it appears that in Pakistan, your ideals were viewed as too liberal, as you just mentioned, and you were made to feel like an outsider. And when you returned to the United States, you were considered a foreigner, not really fitting in, and considered too conservative. So how did you deal with not seeming to fit in anywhere?
I went to poetry, like I said before, but also I started wrapping my head around the idea of why do I care so much about what other people think. And the more and more I started to feel comfortable with myself, the more I was able to slowly let myself realize, okay, fitting into like a neat cultural box isn't the end of the world. And maybe fitting, like not fitting in, isn't the end of the world.
Okay. Can you take a question right now? Looks like we have a caller on the line. Okay.
Yeah,
it looks like we have a caller from 571 area code. Hello, caller, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. do you have a question for Ms. Ahmad?
Yes, I want to ask her what she loves about Pakistan the most.
I think the beautiful culture and the food.
Do you miss it?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, thank you for answering my question.
No problem.
Thank you for calling very much. Okay. Now, you've said that you are desperately looking for a place to call home. What does that mean, and what have you learned so far?
I think home is a place where you feel comfortable, where you feel like you don't have to be scared of anything, and that you feel like where you truly just belong. And I've discovered that I have home in two countries. I have a home in America, and I have a home in Pakistan, even though I don't live there, because a part of my heart is for both countries.
That's a great way to look at things. Now, in spite of all that we've discussed this evening, and the fact that you were made to feel like an outsider both in Pakistan and in the United States, do you feel that you finally found home?
I do. I feel like America is my home, and I am no longer afraid of the fact that some people might not want me here, and the fact that when I return to Pakistan, I can also feel at home there and not feel like, oh my God, I have to feel like I have two homes, and that's okay, because America is my first home. Pakistan will always be my home too.
Okay. Dil, we thank you so much for visiting Donnell Edwards Viewpoints this evening. And we can all learn a very important lesson from you and from your book. And that is that learning to love and accept oneself is the primary component of making peace and accepting others. Thank you for that. And please thank your parents for producing such a wonderful person.
Thank you.
Can we expect more books from you in the future?
Yes, hopefully in 2019, I'm going to publish more.
Okay. Now, please tell our audience again where they may get your book, Finding Home.
It's available on Amazon if you live in the United States, Canada, and London.
Okay. Now, thank you again very much for being our guest this evening. We also
thank you so much for having me.
You are very welcome. We also thank all of you in our listening audience in CWR world. Join us again next Monday at 6:30 p.m. Central Time when our guest will be author, speaker, and activist, Mrs. Chandra Brooks. Mrs. Brooks is the former vice president of the San Jose, California NAACP. Mrs. Brooks has also worked on several coalitions regarding police misconduct, and she is an activist that fights against injustice and discrimination issues. We will be discussing America's current dangerous path of racial hatred and divisiveness. Please join us until then. Be safe and have a great weekend.
This is the CWR Network, hashtag 1 million strong.